Religion is a very interesting topic, especially because personally, I definitely do not consider myself a spiritual person in any way of the word. I don't believe in anything that Buddhism believes, I don't believe in anything that Christianity believes, I don't believe in anything that any religion believes, as far as I'm aware. I do, however, believe in some kind of life, some kind of event after we are not on this earth anymore. But so, regardless of that, I thought it was super interesting to speak with Johnson Chong on this topic of spirituality and what it means to different people and how it can affect different people in different ways. And that is exactly why I brought Johnson Chong on this episode, because we had a lovely talk and he had a lot of insight to bring to the conversation. And so with that said, before you jump into listening to this one, remember to share the episode on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, or wherever you are finding yourself. And so with that said, I hope you enjoyed the episode and I'll see you in the next one. So, Johnson Chong is a first-generation gay Asian American born into a conservative refugee family. And having traveled the world and lived on three different continents, Johnson has modernized ancient wisdom into a practical method of attaining inner freedom. And he is the best-selling author of Sage Sapien, From Karma to Dharma, a spiritual guide and transformational leadership expert. And he's known for helping high-integrity leaders break through the mental and emotional blocks that keeps them from being truly free. And with that said, welcome, Johnson.
Thanks. Thanks, Jonathan, so much for having me. And thanks for the intro. It's weird sometimes listening to an introduction of yourself, but thanks.
Yeah, it's actually funny because every time I write these introductions, I'm kind of nervous because I don't know if I'm saying what the person actually thinks of themselves, and if I paint up this picture that turns out not to be true, that's a bit awkward.
It is a perception, isn't it? I guess what it brings up is, what do we identify with, right? And I guess, you know, for like the back of a book cover or something, to say that I'm a gay Asian American who came from, you know, conservative refugee parents is like very appropriate for that story, but then me in this moment right now is Johnson. I don't think of myself like that, right?
Of course.
So it's always interesting to hear things about the past.
Yeah, right? It's interesting to set the tone versus what's actually happening now. But speaking of your past, your whole journey, from what I've gathered about you, started out with the question, who am I? And that's definitely a question I'm sure most people ask themselves at some point. I've definitely asked myself that sometimes and still do. Like, I don't know, what am I doing? But yeah, your journey started with that question. And how are you still asking yourself that?
It's less now, more of a, I suppose when I was younger, it was different variations of who am I? And now it's more of who am I becoming? I don't care so much about who I am, because I think when we ask that question of who I am, we're trying to put ourselves in a limited, compartmentalized, filed up way of seeing ourselves. Mm-hmm. Am I confident? Am I smart? Am I outgoing? Am I introverted? Am I funny? Am I a musician, right? So we start to, especially when we're younger and we're developing and we're forming our ego and our identity, which is very important, we're trying to pit ourselves into ways of operating. And so we start comparing ourselves to other people, and that's all very natural and healthy at a young age. Mm-hmm. But then we get to a certain stage where it doesn't matter anymore. Who am I? You know, at one point in time, I wanted to be I went to school for theater, actually, and I loved sci-fi. Like, I loved Star Trek and all this stuff. And I thought that, you know, I would go to LA. I'm from New York City, right? So I thought I would go to LA and I would audition for all these like sci-fi shows and be like an alien on some starship. I'm like, great. That was my dream at the time. So that was like an example of who I wanted, you know, to be based off of who I thought I was. So then this happens a lot as we move through life. Things change and then dreams change. And so then my perception of who I am changed and I no longer felt like that's what I wanted to do. And other things happened in my life and I ended up in India and I started this whole spiritual journey, right? And then my idea of who I am, it's constantly shifting. So for me, a more valuable question nowadays is more, who am I becoming? Because I've come to the realization that I am you, you are me, I am them, and we are all each other. And this is something that's been coming up recently with some political things that have been happening in the States with some friends on Facebook that have been commenting, actually just a few moments before we started this conversation, of who we identify with, right? And if we look at this spiritual notion that we are all connected, we're all interconnected, everything that you do affects me, and what these people here over in this country does affects them, and everything is interconnected, right? If we buy into that principle, then we have to also look at the dark parts of ourselves. We have to look at Trump and all of the dictators in the world as reflections of ourselves. And that's really difficult for some people to see because they're not operating with that principle of living. So they don't see the world that way, which is fine. That's the way that they see the world. But from a spiritual lens, if you're seeing the world as oneness, and that a rock and a tree is no different from you or the table, it's the same thing with people. Because the way that we interact with each other is through relationships. Even if it is a political relationship with some crazy man, you know, shouting at the White, right, you know, in the White House, right?
Yeah.
So, and this was something that was, I don't know why I'm taking this whole turn over to politics now, but this is what happened a few moments ago, where I posted something on Facebook, which was quite polarizing for some people, and it triggered some people because we all operate at different states of consciousness. And this is not by any means to like judge someone on their journey, because we're all at different stages of awareness and it's just an observation, right? And some people may not like this and they might feel triggered from it, and that's completely fine. And that's them. You get to feel triggered. If you want to feel triggered, that's not me being triggered. It's you, right? So there's the unconscious, then there's a subconscious, there's a conscious, and then there's the superconscious, or, you know, omnipresent aware. Right? So let's just say there's four essential states of consciousness. And what we're not conscious of, we could be, let's say, very reactive. We could be blaming people for things that are happening in our lives. So we turn to the government, we blame the government, we blame this, we blame that. And even if the government was a political party that you agree with, you still blame someone, right? Because you're living on an unconscious level of the fact that things are happening to you, that life is happening to you. You're the object of life. And when we operate at this level of awareness, we tend to look at everything as what's next. I'm just trying to survive. I just need to pay the rent. Live this standard of life that is quite narrow and limited. And this is what it means to be a good person. It's living life through a certain kind of parameter. Right? This is how life is supposed to unfold, right? And then you have, you know, the next level up level of consciousness. You're more connected to your emotions. You start to realize that your thoughts and your emotions from a subconscious level start to affect your reality, right? And you can start to see that your dreams may play out in real life. You may have goals and you might start to achieve them, right? And most people are more or less in this level of awareness. Right? And then when you get to more conscious ways of existing, you start to see that even, like, for example, one of my teachers said that, and this is also in Mother Teresa's, in her book, you know, she says that I didn't go to Calcutta just because, you know, I wanted to do the great work and go on this spiritual mission to help humanity. She went to Calcutta in India because she found her inner Hitler. And a lot of people found that a really confusing thing to you know, that she would say.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does that mean?
What does that mean, right? We all have an inner Hitler. We all have an inner Trump. Mm-hmm. And to just wish, you know, Hitler was dead, never came to be, or that Trump was dead, that'd be really easy, you know? And there's all these, like, shows that always investigate some sort of sci-fi time travel plot, and they want to go back and they kill Hitler, right? And then they change the course of history. And then what happens to the rest of, you know, history right now as we know it? It changes. A lot of the beautiful things that have been created since that time, since World War II, don't exist in that way anymore, right? And so with great destruction also comes great beauty. And from a spiritual perspective, we acknowledge that, we know that. We know that there's constantly destruction, and we know that there's constantly beauty and order and life coming out of that. And from a very zoomed in angle, it becomes really difficult when we feel like we're in the game fighting and entangling ourselves with taking sides. And this is something in, you know, the Buddhist way, it's about coming to the middle. It's not about taking sides and from the polar extremes of left wing, right wing, good, bad, right? All these things. And so this was the post. This was the nature of the post I posted on Facebook. It was about Trump and I don't agree with Trump. I don't follow politics. I'm not a political person. I live in Australia. I haven't lived in America in 7 years, right? I look at the news every now and again, but a lot of it's fear-based, so I switch it off. My life continues on, right? And there are other things that happen. And so the whole post was really about, there are people in the spiritual communities wishing that he would die, and that, oh, karma's a bitch, and this is what happens. Which could be true, right? That, oh, yeah, this is what happens when you do this. This is what happens. You don't, right? For sure. But the point of the post was that someone is intentionally wishing ill will to someone, even if they don't like that person. Which, you know, like, if I didn't like you, let's just say, I don't like you, Jonathan, but and then I just, like, I wish you were dead, right? That's a really powerful thing to say. And so it was just bringing to light that some people who are practicing compassion and empathy and all of this stuff were saying these things. I don't know if it was intentional or unintentional, but I felt the need to bring it up to show people that, well, you know, you're kind of doing that. And then a lot of people got angry.
Yeah, and you mentioning that reminds me of a couple that I talked to quite a long time ago now, or a few months back. They had a brand called Love in America, where they focus, because when you said it's not about taking sides, it's not about choosing different sides, it's more about finding common ground. It reminded me of this couple, because what they did was they traveled through America and talked to different individuals. Very simple, super simple. But what they tried to do was find ways of connecting with individuals that you probably otherwise wouldn't really connect with. Whether it be political views or other tensions in whatever way it is. They try to find common ground and realize that you can be friends and you can accept another individual, even though that individual might have a completely different view on the world than what you have. And to me, it really, really resonates with me, because even in Sweden, I think even in the world in general right now, there's a lot of opinions, in short. very different opinions on how society should work and on races, on, well, you know the topics. Without proper conversation and without accepting one another, there is never going to be any kind of progress being made. Because if everyone just keeps on pointing fingers, like, oh no, you're wrong, you can't think like that, my way of thinking is the right way of thinking, then nothing is ever going to happen. You have to actually have a conversation like we're doing right now and seeing the other person for who they are. And if they have a view that doesn't really resonate with you, at least you can try to understand why that person has that view and perhaps even have a conversation about it. And yeah, what you said reminded me of that.
Yeah, and the thing is, a lot of people don't necessarily resonate with that, especially people and friends who are in America, is because America is a very polarized place. You have to be left or right. Right? To be indifferent means that you don't care, and then people are angry at you. You're not right. Taking a side. You're not standing up for what is right, what is just, what is supposed to be this ideal of freedom, right? So when you start to live more spiritually, whether the world goes Trump or not Trump, whatever happens in the elections, you are not bothered. Because you're so centered in who you are and what you're becoming, that no matter what happens, you know that from the grand scheme of things, you as a soul moving through this biological, physical experience knows that every opportunity is not wasted. Every opportunity is a learning experience, even if it's something really awful, like going through another 4 years of Trump, right? Do I, as a person, want that? I don't want that. Right. But if it does happen, I'm ready to go with it. Right. I'm not going to sit and complain about it. I'm going to carry on with my life and do the things that I need to do in order to be fully optimized as a human being. Right. I'm not going to sit there and conjecture and hypothesize of, oh, well, would the world be better off or not better off without him? Like, what is the point in using that energy to then do that?
Right. Of course. Right?
So this is where then I can empathize and see that some people have been hurt from a lot of, because I haven't lived in America, so I haven't been affected by a lot of the policy changes that he has made, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't feel it directly. I feel it indirectly on the other side of the world, right? Through, media and whatnot, and international relations, but I don't feel it directly on American soil, even being an American, So, yes, I get that some people are feeling the actual pain of like losing income or losing rights, right? All of this, it feels like you're being attacked. And so what happens to creatures in the wild when they're being attacked? You either defend or you fight back, right? It's one of these
options. Yeah.
However, if you're on a spiritual path, which is the work that I do, we want to find a third way. We don't really, you can fight, but you're not fighting from that place. You're not fighting from the place of, I need to be right, right? I need to fight for my beliefs because my beliefs are changing all the time. So what am I really fighting for? It's all an illusion. So who cares, right? Who cares, but it also is important at the same time. So it's this dance between what is right and also, does it matter? And then also feeling that you're not wasting your life and that you have goals. So it's a very interesting equation to balance between doing something and doing nothing. And this is something that's, it's a continual journey, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's definitely, it's a difficult question. And I think everyone battles with it in some way or another. But before we dive even deeper into that, because I have a feeling that's a whole conversation in itself, I want to go back a little bit, because as I mentioned and you mentioned, you grew up in a family with conservative parents.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this has affected you in some way or another. And I'm also pretty sure that you've faced a lot of challenges as a consequence of this. Would you say that these challenges is something that has shaped you into who you are today? What type of challenges did you face throughout the years?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in New York City. I was born and raised there. My parents escaped from China to Hong Kong and then eventually filed for asylum and then went to the States because their families were merchant class. During the Cultural Revolution, there was a lot of turmoil politically, and they couldn't stay. They would have died, right? Mm-hmm. So here we are in America, me, my brother, my sister, born to traumatized people, you know, my parents, who have faced a lot of violence and abuse, seeing family members turn on each other just so that they can survive, people giving each other up, facing time in jail, right? A lot of violence and betrayal and abandonment almost as well from your home country basically rejecting you, mm-hmm. right? So, and it's not necessarily a situation they would have chosen. And so me growing up into that situation was physically, mentally, emotionally very challenging because my parents did not know how to express their love in conscious ways. So instead they would resolve to physical beatings or emotional reprimanding. So every time that they said something that was emotionally and verbally abusive, it really was their way of expressing love. It just didn't come across that way. I didn't know it at the time, because when your mother and your father's yelling at you about why you didn't do well at school, and then they beat you because of it, you basically as a child go, oh, wait a minute, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not intelligent enough. I've disappointed them and I've let them down. So then I start to feel bad about myself. So this was my whole journey as a child.
That's a very, I have to interrupt you. That's a very interesting way of viewing what you call emotional abuse. When you said it's their way of expressing love.
I didn't realize they were expressing their love until much later on. Mm-hmm. But that was their way. They didn't have any sort of vocabulary to offer it, because as I started to understand more about their life, because they didn't really open up about their life until we were older, when they would break down. They were having emotional breakdowns probably when I was 13, 14, 15, around this age, where it became all too much all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Parenting became too much. Living in New York City became too much. Having to support three children in a country where they didn't speak English very well became too much, right? Mm-hmm. And also we were starting to develop our own personalities and not obey what mm-hmm. they're doing. We're becoming teenagers, right? We're doing naughty things. So when I started to understand that my father basically witnessed his mother killed and hung from his home, mm-hmm. and it was covered up. He basically went off for a haircut one day, came back, and she was murdered. But people said, oh, no, she committed suicide. It was all covered up. Right? And it was at that point in time that he knew he had to leave his village because the communists would have killed him, because they had something against his family. So he's witnessed a lot of suffering and pain and all of these things that you shouldn't have to go through as a teenager. This was his teenage years, right? And then he spent most of his 20s in jail running away from communists. So I didn't know that, right? Wow. So then you wonder why someone then beats you and lashes out at you, because they're frustrated. Because they come from a place and a time where that's all they knew. They didn't have their parents at a young age. My mother had a similar story. They lost their parents. Both my parents lost their parents relatively early on.
Okay.
Except for my mother. My mother's mother kind of left her alone. But so there's a lot of these stories that they carried. And so it transfers across as, well, I don't want my kids to live the kind of life that I had. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure they get a good education, make sure they have food on the table. And if they're not doing well, I'm going to make sure that they're doing well, right? So if I started to step back and look at it from this point of view, then I see, oh, that's their expression of love. But at the time, even realizing that, it was still but it doesn't feel nice. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel good, even though that's their expression. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Right? It still hurts. Their expression of love hurts me. And that took a long time, you know, slowly, slowly unpeeling that through various spiritual practices to basically forgive them. Mm. Because understanding why someone's doing something doesn't make it easy to forgive them.
No, of course.
Forgiving is a long process sometimes. Yeah. It's a short process.
And was that part of the reason and how you found your way into spirituality? Or has it always kind of been part of you? Because you talking about it now, you seem to be a very, very understanding person, even though when you had this emotional abuse being brought upon you as from your parents, you're still so understanding and loving.
I wasn't loving at the time. I used to be really angry at them. And I mean, I love my parents now. They still don't agree with me. They don't like me being gay. And they still think I'll get married to a nice Chinese girl and have like 9 babies or something, right? They think I'm 35 years old. They think I'm in a phase or something, right? And it's now funny, right? But at the time, it was not funny. I'll tell you that. Was like, wow, okay, they're really backwards. But I really had to step back and look at it from at their point of view, because it's not, I have to live with my feelings about it. I have to live with my anger and my doubt and my fear or whatever it is that comes up because of them. So if I don't address it within me and be responsible for my own feelings about it, then that's on me. That's not on them, right? I can't change them. Mm. So a lot of the work that I started to go into was, I wasn't looking for anything. It just sort of slowly happened. I was in theater school. That's where I started my yoga practice, actually. And it was part of the actor's training to take care of the mind and the body, right? So it was very physical and mental. Mm-hmm. And then I think by the second and third year of university, I started to explore more of the spiritual aspects of the yoga practice. And then I started to go into meditation. And then slowly, slowly, I started to dive into the world of energy healing and shamanism and all of this stuff. And it all started from the physical, from the yoga. And from then, I guess it just became this, I guess I can't really pinpoint it as to one event. It was just many things and many people that just came into my life that mm-hmm. started me questioning who I am and the things that I was doing and the actions that I was choosing. And because I was questioning so much and questioning and doing all of this inner work, it just, all of these feelings about my parents, these old stories I had about my parents, all the anger I had for my parents, it just slowly fell away. And I had a new understanding about my parents.
Is that what's, because to me personally, I can't really define spirituality, because I've talked to some on this podcast and some just in personal life. I've talked to a lot of people that define themselves as being spiritual. And every single individual defines it very differently. Some just speak of a greater purpose, and some just speak of finding a meaning in life, and some speak of just finding happiness. And This makes me think of what is spirituality for you, and why is it good for you?
Sure, yeah, spirituality is a really loaded term because, like all words in any language, we can never really know what other people mean by these words. Only you know what you mean by it. And so we do our best to try to communicate what we mean. And really, spirituality is a bunch of bullshit. That's why, because it's just a word used to describe various practices and traditions that are coming from some sort of essence of some religion, but they take out only the parts that make sense to them. And so, I mean, it's just so convoluted, right? So what is spirituality? It's like, what is this? So, I mean, I don't really like using the word, but it's kind of this mainstream word that people know what it is. So we can kind of, it's like looking at a target board, like with the dart, and like just throwing it somewhere randomly on the board and like, oh, that's spirituality. Right? We don't really know what the bullseye is. And it's going to mean different things for different people. For me, it's the connection to spirit. And when I say spirit, some people might see it as energy or universe or life. So, for example, today I was hiking in the forest and there were various creatures coming around in the forest, right? And some of them I was aware of, but some of them I wasn't aware of until I was, you know, my partner said, hey, look behind you. You know, there's a butterfly following you, like for like 2 minutes following you. And it's like, oh, wow. So at that point in time, I wasn't connected to spirit. I wasn't realizing there was a butterfly following around me. But then there was another time where I realized I almost stepped on a very poisonous snake. Mm-hmm. And so I looked down and I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. And so in that connection, you can call it intuition or whatever it is, but if I had not chosen to stay, you know, a minute or two behind just to rest at this one rock and stepped ahead, I would have crossed paths directly with this snake and probably got into a bit of a issue because it would have been right on the path and it would have been right there. But the point in time that I connected and met the snake, it was kind of slowly moving away off the path, right? So the timing was right. And so that's a kind of connection with spirit, that you do things because it feels right. I don't know why I stopped there. I wasn't tired. I just wanted to stand there and look around, right? And so things start to happen. And so that's one way of connecting to spirit. You know, another way is seeing signs everywhere. So let's say you have dreams about a project you're creating or and you keep seeing, let's say you're creating a logo for something, I don't know. Yeah. And you're trying to figure out what the logo is supposed to be. And then everywhere you look, there's a bird, a picture of that bird that you see everywhere. And it's on the posters outside, it's on the bus, it's on the train, everywhere you go, it's there. So that is your connection to spirit or energy showing you a possible pathway. Right. And so this is my relationship to spirituality. Mm-hmm. And then all the different practices like yoga, meditation, and the shamanic ceremonial work and rituals and energy, where all this stuff is really just a vehicle to deepen the relationship to something that is beyond me, that powers this body and my mind and my consciousness and life, so that I can be more in harmony with it. And that's it. That's all it is to me. How I get there, what car I drive to get there, it changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of trying to define spirituality, I'm sure a lot of people, when you say spirituality, another word that also comes to mind is religion. And personally, I'm not sure how to separate the both, because there's obviously a lot of differences between the two, or there can be at least. But I don't know if this is even anything that you have thought of yourself, but is there a difference? And if so, what is the difference between religion and spirituality? Or is it kind of the same? And like you said, is it just a bullshit word?
It's very similar. They're very similar. They look very similar because in religion, you have precepts that you follow. Like in Christianity, you have the Ten Commandments. Mm. In yoga, which is a spiritual path, right? There's also precepts. There's the 10 yamas and niyamas, the do's and the don'ts. It's a moral way of being. Mm-hmm. Don't steal, be pure, clean yourself, right? Nonviolence, all of these things, right? So yes, you have things that are guiding you, and they're like pillars that keep you in integrity. And then there's the practice of it. So now you can be very dogmatic in religion and say, no, this is the way, you must practice this. Mm. You can also be the same way in spirituality. No, you must, this is the way to enlightenment. This is what the Buddha meant, right? From an outsider's perspective, they look very similar. So that I can understand why people that are more secular or world material based, I don't want to say, that's not a good word to use to describe them, but people that are not spiritual, let's say, they're more, let's say, atheists. Mm-hmm. I would say it makes sense why people are like, well, it's like all these yoga people, it's just like a cult, because they're following something. And in religion, they're following something. Spiritual people like to differentiate themselves, I feel anyway, from religious people, is that they want to feel that they have some sort of ownership over their path, so that their path is slightly different from everyone else's interpretation of it. It's their own unique individual expression of whatever the precepts were. Like, okay, here, this is the breath technique. This is how you do the yoga. This is how you meditate, right? This is how. And then they come to that experience. So I would say that a lot of people practicing a spiritual path nowadays are practicing it almost sycophantic, like how most religious people follow a religious leader. Mm-hmm. And really that kind of negates the whole point of a spiritual practice, because the whole point of it is to create your own path, right? So there's one mountain, all the roads lead up the mountain, find your own way up the mountain, because we're all going to go up there in our own way, in our own time, using many things that other people have used, right? Because there's always, you know, in the base of the mountain, there's always like the roads that people have cut out. So we're going to follow those roads. But when we start getting up to the top, we have to start to find and deviate and go off on our own path. And this is kind of how I see, you know, my version of spirituality, because we can look for teachers and mentors and guides to show us the way, but ultimately we need to come up with the conclusions ourselves and decide which way to go and what to do.
And that really, what you just said, really speaks to me. And because finding your own way is personally such an important part of being, in short, being human. And I'm 21 years old, and I'm in the middle of like basically figuring out my life. I've dropped out twice of university. First one being from studying to become a preschool teacher, which is a lot of fun. I love kids, but the specific work wasn't right. And then the second one being PR and communication, which is super interesting, but the school and teachers really sucked. So I was like, no, I can do this on my own. And that's, to me, that's such a simple solution. It's a simple, choice to make. Because I saw this way that personally feels so much better than following this road that mostly 97% of other people follow. But all these, or not all, but a lot of others, other individuals look at me and say, oh, you're so brave. Like, how can you do this? Like, you drop out, you're not going to have an education, you're not going to have this and that. But to me, I'm just like, well, no, but I'm going to get experience in whatever it is that I want to get in, experience in. And sure, it may take 5 years longer, but hey, I'm hopefully.
Or it may not.
Yeah, or may not.
It might be 5 years quicker. Exactly. Not everyone is meant to get a university degree. Mm. I did, but I got mine in arts. Yeah. I don't. Right. If I were to get a corporate job, right? I've never had a corporate job in my life, but if I were to, my degree is a bachelor in fine arts, 4 year acting conservatory. Like, what is it going to do? Yes. Right. It doesn't actually, it gives me intuitive skills. Like, I learned a lot about myself and about human psychology and how people work. And for me at the time, because I was such a hurt person at 17, 18, 19, 20, all the way to, you know, early 20s. That whole time of my life, I was very hurt, right? From family, from the world, you know, being gay, not knowing who I was and all this stuff, right? So for me, it made sense to go to university because it gave me the structure to figure it out. It gave me the safety. But you may not need that because you have a podcast that you're starting at 21. You've decided, you know, you have a very clear idea of where it is that you want to go. You don't necessarily know what the end result is going to be, but that's your path. And so long as you stick to it, it is what it is.
Exactly. And throughout the years of, like, I remember when I was, let's say, 16, something like that. I wanted to, like, my dream job was to be a photographer. And while I still love doing photography and I do a lot of, like, Photoshop editing and stuff like that for just personal expression, I guess, I definitely don't want to work as a photographer. And after that, after I realized that, I wanted to do graphic design. And while I still love doing graphic design, I don't want to do it as my main source of income. And then it went on to, well, I guess the next step was not even knowing what I wanted to do. But then the next step is I wanted to do marketing. I wanted to do what I studied for a few months, PR and communication. And that's still super interesting. And I've done a few or one internship doing this exact thing. And it's super interesting to me. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is that throughout the years, what I wanted to do has changed a lot. And that's completely okay. And I'm probably going to change in, I don't know, 1 year, 1 month, 1 day. I might wake up tomorrow and be like, no, I wanna be an actor. And that's okay, because if that's something I want to do and makes me happy in that moment, that's completely fine. Because at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. Are you happy? Wonderful. Continue what you're doing. Are you not happy? Okay, stop. Find out what makes you happy. And trying to connect that back to what we've been talking about, I think a lot of people follow a road that isn't necessarily a road that they actually want to follow. It's more of a way that they know will work. It's a safe road. There's no, like, you encounter, there's no snakes and there's no dangerous animals. It's a safe road. But in reality, the other route with a bunch of harsh bushes and deep rivers you have to cross, that's the way that these people actually want to go, but they're afraid to do so because either it's family, friends, or just social pressure in general that's keeping them from doing that. And to me, that annoys me so much. It makes me upset because these people, they want to do so many things, but they're not doing it simply because of outside pressure.
Would you say that is the driving force of you doing what you are doing now? That it's kind of motivating you to step up as a role model for millennials?
Definitely. Or
you're not a millennial. You're
well.
You're...
I was born 99, so.
Okay, so you're not. You're what is that? Oh, that is a millennial.
Yeah, that is a millennial. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely a huge part of the reason. I mean, I've never expressed it literally like you said, like that I want to be a role model of showing what is possible. But
yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was, I'm glad you said that. That's actually a really good way of saying it.
You could be changing how it appears with the possible, it could be photography, it could be podcasting, it could be marketing, it could be PR, it could be all these different things, so long as it's anchored in your why. And if your why is, I want to show people that you can live in conscious, sustainable ways and be happy and fulfilled and joyful and peaceful without having to follow the norm, then that might be your way. Right. And then the way that you express that might change. Right. It's like, you know, in The Life of Pi, you know, that movie, The Life of Pi.
I haven't seen it, but I know it's.
Okay. So there's this one part in the beginning where the Pi as a kid, he's running around trying on all of these different religions. One day he's trying on, you know, Judaism. One day he's Christian. One day he's, you know, practicing Islam, and then he's Hindu, and he's exploring all these, and he's, you know, reading the texts, and he's repeating things out loud, and he's a kid doing this. Mm-hmm. And it's like his beliefs are like clothes, right? It was just changing the way that we look. But the core of who we all are, whether you practice whatever religion or whatever spiritual path, is that we're trying to leave some sort of footprint in the world and change the world in our own unique way.
Yeah.
And for some people, that might be role modeling. For some people, it's, you know, cleaning up the world's oceans. For some people, it's finding the cure to cancer, whatever it is. For some people, it's just having a lot of babies and being a really good parent.
Yeah.
That it doesn't matter what it is, so long as you have chosen it. The issue that you probably have, and I have too as well, is that people are not choosing. They are autopilot living their life as passed down to them by their parents or their grandparents, and like, okay, here you go. We lived in this way, so off you go. If you want to live your life that way and you've chosen it consciously, then fine. But if you haven't, the question is why?
Yeah.
Right? And that's kind of a lot of the work that I do with people. It's why, and getting to the why of it. Yeah.
Would you say that's a large part of the reason why people don't follow these paths that they actually want to follow? It's just that they're not actually choosing consciously. Would you say that's part of the reason?
Again, it's with, there's many, many reasons, and every person's very unique. But I would say across the board, it's that level of unconsciousness that we talked about, those four different states of consciousness. And a lot of it's karmic. So when I say karmic or karma, from an epigenetics point of view, it's the intergenerational stories that one inherits from their family. Mm-hmm. So let's use mine as an example. So for me, the intergenerational stories or themes that I've inherited from my mother and my father are themes of safe, the world not being safe because people are out to get you, right? The government's gonna kill you. The communists are gonna kill you. Right. You're not gonna have enough food. You're only gonna live on one bowl of rice every day. So you have to save up your food. You have to save, save, save. So there's a scarcity energy in how they parented me. You must save all your pennies. As a kid, I used to save all my pennies. You know, I didn't throw anything out. My parents are hoarders. They keep everything because when they were growing up, they had nothing because everything was taken from them, right, by the communists. So you see that energy was taken into their parenting, into my life. So I had to spend, you know, most of my adult life taking away this whole scarcity mentality because it doesn't allow me to fully take the risks to do the things that I want to do to be fully optimized as a human being, right? So that's one example. And then there's like the emotional stuff. There's all these many different layers that we all inherit. We don't consciously inherit them, but it happens when our parents are parenting us. Asian families are very transactional. I'm sure many families are too. I don't think it's just Asian families, but you get rewarded for something if you do something, right? So here's some money if you get, you know, an A plus or whatever it is, or you get 2 hours of TV time if you do this. Like, it was a very strict household, right? We weren't, the TV was locked up in the living room, the doors were chained, you know, so it wasn't like we were free to play. You get to play if you do this, right? Everything's transactional versus allowing us to be. So then that translated to me having to seek validation by doing things for people. So in my social interactions, this is of course in retrospect, when I look back on how I engaged with people growing up, trying to make friends, I would constantly do things for people because I wanted people to like me, right? Mm-hmm. So I would let people cheat off of my homework in high school because I was very good at it, you know, and I wouldn't charge them. I wasn't the kid who was, I could have made money off of them, but I wanted to be friends with them. So I let them do it for free and they wouldn't talk to me afterwards, but they copied my homework. They copied off my tests. They did well. And then they would kind of like give me that punch on the shoulder or tap me and be like, "You're amazing," kind of thing, right? And that was enough. I was like, wow, I love that, you know, because I never got that from my parents. So it really sculpted the way that I behaved around people. And then, well, I'm not conscious of that then though. But now, you know, I'm conscious that I was doing that. And when you become more conscious, you go, wait a minute, that's not how I want to live my life. I don't want to live my life trying to seek validation from people all the time, that I have to constantly do things for people so that they like me, right? I don't want to live my life thinking that there's not enough food, that there's not enough money, and that I have to save all of my money, and that in order to be a successful human being, I have to work really hard. Like, no, I don't want to live life that way. Mm. And so this is what I mean by karma. Karma is the stories that we inherit, the trauma that happens to my parents. I inherit that emotionally, energetically, all of that. And we spend most of our life trying to clean it and clear it so that we can figure out what we want. And so this is the majority of the work at the beginning of one's spiritual journey, is figuring out why I do this. Why do I think like this? Why do I behave like this? And until we can understand it and then let it go, we won't really step into our fullest potential.
So. Yeah, I know we're running low on time. There's 1,000 different things I want to touch on, but to try to sort of round this off on a positive note, or a inspirational note, I guess. I want to touch on. You speak of being conscious and making conscious decisions in your life, and knowing what it is that you're doing with your life. How can an individual that's at this very moment not making conscious decisions, how can this individual start being conscious and knowing what they're doing?
That's a difficult question, because everyone will find their own way into their self-realization or their path towards self-realization whenever it happens. Unfortunately, a lot of us learn through pain and through mistakes. Mm-hmm. And we become so fed up and tired of things behaving a certain way that we essentially have two choices, or three really. One would be that we find a new way and we seek help with personal development, spiritual practices, and self-growth. The second choice would be to just numb ourselves and just continue doing whatever it is, and then we're really unhappy. And then the third choice is suicide. We kill ourselves, right? These are the possible ways, right? And then there's everything in between, right? But those are the three essential ways that these are the choices we have, right? And I don't know if this is inspirational, but it's...
This is a difficult question. I know it is.
It's a difficult question because some people are going to have mentors and people that they come into their life to guide them along the way. And some of them have like one mentor, some of them have many different teachers come in, some of them accidentally listen to a podcast, let's say. Who knows what happens? I don't know how that's going to happen for someone, but the point is that they have to be willing, mm-hmm. right? And even if they're not conscious of it, if they listen to something, they go, oh, wow, I never thought about it that way. If they're willing to then from that point on explore it, then great, then there's somewhere to go. But if someone's not willing, then there's no point in trying to.
So it's more about being open, I guess, open to choices.
Yeah, open and willing. I would say there's a difference between open and willingness. Willingness is that you have to choose. Because you could be open, like, oh, we're at a buffet. Wow, look at the salad bar. Look at this is the meat section. There are the vegetables. You know, you're open. You see many things, but you need to choose. So open doesn't mean willing. You could, right? You have to be willing to choose something.
Right.
And until someone chooses, you can't help them. You can offer your opinion, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Because going back to that whole Facebook post earlier, this particular person kept commenting because they were quite angry at what I wrote. And this is someone I know, but I know that they're operating at a level of consciousness where it's a lower vibrational state of consciousness. Again, this is not a judgment. It's just where they're at. What I consider a lower vibrational state is that someone sees the world. It's when you see yourself as an object of the world, that the universe and life is out to get you, and that everything that happens that is bad in the world is because there's some sort of force of evil that is out there. And this is a lower vibrational state of being, because if you operate like that, then you're operating out of paranoia and fear all the time. Whereas if you see all of the people that you dislike, all of your enemies, all the people that make you angry as opportunities to learn about yourself, that's a higher vibrational state. Because instead of being angry at them, you go, oh, wow, thank you so much for making me angry. Let me figure out why I'm angry. I'm going to go meditate on this because I'm really angry at you right now, right? But I'm not going to wish you dead. I'm just angry. I want to figure out why I'm angry because of what you said. So then you take the responsibility on yourself because you know you're responsible for your own happiness. That's a higher vibrational state.
That's a really, really good point that you say everything I believe in. let's say there's my nearest grocery store, there's always a person begging for money outside of it. I'm assuming he's homeless and he needs money to pay food. And while I personally definitely feel for this person, like, I don't want to be in his situation. I don't want to sit outside the store begging for money. No one wants that. But at the same time, I'm a huge believer in that you are 200% responsible for what happens in your life. And while there's definitely circumstances that may change, I mean, if you were born in the middle of a war, you can't really do much about that. But at least speaking from a personal perspective, in living in a country like Sweden and in a good place, basically, you are so responsible for your own actions and your own decisions. And because those decisions will take you to whatever future it is that you want to be taken to. And for someone to then end up on the street begging for money, I definitely feel bad for a person, but I also don't know what has happened prior to that. The person may be a criminal. The person may be this and that and all these different circumstances and decisions being made. And those decisions have led upon this very moment. But then again, there's definitely possibilities that this person maybe is sick and there wasn't enough money to pay for his bills. And then that's not something I can blame that person for, but I guess what I'm getting at is decisions. Everything is based on decisions. And for me to feel bad for a person, I also need to know what decisions that individual has made. Yeah.
Well, this is a different conversation, because I see that differently with, so in my lineage of shamanism that I practice, if you were to be killed by a microbe or parasite in the jungle, let's say you took a trip to the Amazon, or you were eaten by a wild animal, like a bear or a jaguar or something like that, to the shaman, there is no difference being killed either by the parasite or the microbe or being killed by the jaguar or some wild animal. Whereas in Western culture, we see one as an accident. So if you were killed by a wild animal, oh, that was an accident. It was unfortunate. It was bad luck. And then the other is an illness. It's a disease because it was a parasite. It was the evil force in nature trying to kill you, right? So this is the Western way of looking at things. In an indigenous shamanic way of looking at things, we're out of balance. We're out of alignment. So it doesn't matter what the reason is. If the person is, maybe they were evicted out of their home because they couldn't pay for rent or medical bills or whatever, or they decided to make a whatever their choices are. It doesn't matter what they were. The point is, whatever happened, they were not in alignment. And then to then question which reason is better than, one reason is better than the other reason, is not really the point. Because when we start saying, oh, well, if this person, you know, why do I value a homeless person begging on the street if they had, their circumstance was that they lost their income and they were, well, they couldn't help it. Mm-hmm. Why does that make them better than someone who, let's say, made a series of choices that led them to rob a bank and now they were let out of prison and they don't know how to live life because they were in prison for 20 years or whatever it was, right? Why are we placing that value judgment? From an energetic point of view, all that we can see, right, if we really zoom out, is that this person is not in their fullest alignment. However, they also might be in their fullest alignment. That's also another possibility. So when you go to places like India, where poverty is everywhere, when I take people on retreat, sometimes people make the comment that, oh, these poor people, I can't believe they're living in all this filth, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to look at it culturally, because in India, they subscribe to the concept of karma. So one believes that they have done a series of things in a previous lifetime to then come into a situation where they are like in this situation, in this poor situation. So, but at the same time, you see a lot of homeless people and poor people in the streets really happy. They're living life very simply. They might be really dirty. They don't have a lot, right? But they take care of each other. And there's this, they have smiles on their faces because they've accepted, and this is a very difficult concept for Western people to understand, they've surrendered to their station in life. Whereas everything in Western culture is about striving to improve your station, which basically implies that wherever you are at is not enough. And so when we look at homeless people and poor people from that point of view, we're judging the value of our souls, right? So I don't look at a homeless person as like, oh, wow, I feel bad for that person, because then that's pity. The energy of pity is not useful, because it's placing judgment on a series of things that I don't even know what happened, right, for this particular person. And some of it could be past life stuff. Or it could actually be this person chose to be homeless and that they actually are really happy living simply. And I have seen that, you know.
Really?
I've seen that in India. And you have, so in India, you have these people called babas. Mm-hmm. And babas are, they travel sometimes barefoot, and they are at the mercy of the kindness of strangers. So they go from place to place to place, to temple to temple to temple, and people feed them and they are taken care of.
wherever the wind blows, that's where they will go. They have no home. They sleep a night here, and the next night they're over there, and then they're walking 1,000 miles down south over there, and you never know where they're going to be, right? And this is a choice. This is an actual spiritual path that some people take. That's a spiritual path for some people. Some people do that, and they disguise themselves as babas, as like spiritual ascetics. But they're actually doing it as a cop-out. They're doing it because they're being lazy. They're not actually doing it for a spiritual reason. They're doing it because, well, someone's going to feed me. I'm just going to go with the rest of them. And we're all going to go get free food there, free meal there. And then we're going to go to that temple, right? So nothing is as it seems, right?
It's an interesting take on it. This is the whole reason I'm doing this podcast, because I want to have different perspectives. I want to challenge my own views. Like I've been saying, there's 1,000 different topics I would love to cover with you. But that being said, we have been talking for a long time. And I'm sure the person listening to this is getting tired or has already quit listening. So with that said, I'm gonna say thank you so very much for having this conversation. And before we do that, I am sure you have a few or something to promote, a book or a website or anything you want.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. If anyone is interested, they can look up my book. It's called Sage Sapien, From Karma to Dharma. And they can get that on Amazon if they just Google that. So it's Sage Sapien, From Karma to Dharma, or they can find it. There's a link on my website at johnsonchong.com.
Awesome. They want to find out. And the links to that is going to be in the description to wherever the person listening to this is listening to it. And so with that said, thank you so much, Jansson. It was super interesting personally. And thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jonathan, for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to have these kinds of conversations.